Coming up, we got Bobby Marks talking about the state of the Eastern Conference. Who are the teams that are going to actually have a chance to win it all besides Boston and Indiana now that they're likely out of the picture? Bobby and I get into that. After that, got Sam Esfandiari from Light Years Ahead and Kirk Henderson from Mavs Moneyball talking about the Warriors and the Mavericks, two timeline team-building concepts. What's going to go on with those teams moving forward this year? Do they actually have a chance at winning it all, or are the Warriors just a retirement home team and the Mavericks are stuck playing with two timelines? That's all coming up right now. Welcome back to the Kevin O'Connor Show. Joining me today from ESPN in the Sports Business Classroom, it's Bobby Marks.
Day one of a long journey, but I always love coming out here for Summer League. I always ask, could they do something about the heat? And I come back, and it's always 109 in the summer.
I have to come back in December during the NBA right. Cup, and it's like windy and scary, deserty at that time at night.
That's right.
But Bobby, let's talk today about the Eastern Conference, because we've seen some change in the East. Tatum, torn Achilles. Tyrese Halliburton, torn Achilles. The team in the finals, the team that won the finals the year prior, likely not contenders next season. Things have changed in the Eastern Conference, and so I want to go through some of the teams in the East that have made moves, trying to make a push in the Eastern Conference, and I'm going to throw some teams at you, and I want you to tell me, are they still a move away or multiple moves away, or are they already contenders?
Okay, that's
and
good.
So I want to start out with open-ended question for you, though. Who do you think raised their chances the most in the East? Is it Atlanta, Orlando, somebody else?
Well, it's almost like you almost want to say New York because they didn't do anything. And it's like the, I always said, it's like the last man standing as far as where New York is, as far as bringing the seven players back. They're starting five and added Gershon Yabusele and Jordan Clarkson in here. But let's remove the Knicks from the equation. I would say Orlando, just because, and I know they've lost in the second round, in the first round 2 years in a row. The Desmond Bane trade to go out and address a need as far as getting another scorer, a guy can shoot the ball. Tyus Jones, a facilitator who, certainly had an up and down year in Phoenix, and I think a lot of players had an up and down year last year in Phoenix. I do like where they are right now. I think a lot of it has to do with where they are health-wise with Banchero and Franz Wagner and Jalen Suggs. But it's interesting, a team that, I don't want to say been conservative, but has basically been kind of tried to thread the needle as far as drafting and developing. And you basically kind of hit a wall and you said, okay, now we have to go out and be a little bit more aggressive here. But I would say it's probably for me, it's Orlando as far as that team that I think they've done enough. I mean, if you told me they're in the Western Conference, I would say, well, they probably have another move here. And maybe there's a move as far as maybe addressing the center position a little bit, as far as I know they've got Wendell Carter there. But I do think how the Eastern Conference stacks up right now, I do think as of today, I think they can compete to get out of the Eastern Conference.
I think they've done enough moves-wise. It's just a matter of what level do your best players actually reach? Does Banchero shoot the hell out of the ball like he did in the playoffs, or is he up and down as a shooter like he was during the regular season? Does Franz Wagner continue to do everything but shoot? Does he continue to look like a guy that has the yips from three-point range? Because with Wagner, it's weird.
Yeah.
Like, he's a great free-throw shooter. He's got great touch in the lane, but he just can't shoot jumpers. And to me, I think the roster around their two best players is good enough in the Eastern Conference, but are Wagner and Banchero in a position to be the best players on a title team?
That's a great question. As far as when you have two max players, and it's the expectation is that they're going to be two of the top 20 players in the NBA here. I think the one concern if I had is I'd probably look at their bench a little bit here. And, you're going into year three with Anthony Black. We haven't seen Jed Howard at all. I would love another scorer off the bench, a guy that can maybe make shots for you. Those are certainly hard to come by. I think you're from the front court depth-wise, I think you're fine because you're bringing back Mo Wagner, who hopefully will be healthy. You've got Jonathan Isaac. You have Goga Bitadze. Yeah, Tristan Da Silva. You have a lot of interchangeable bigs there, but I do think if you wanted to go out and try to do something else, and they're limited with how they do it, I'd love to go get another scorer, a guy that can, you always love that sixth man that can come off your bench in the playoffs and give you, Payne Pritchard, for example, Sam, a guy that can come in and score the basketball for you. Yeah, and then you don't see him until game four. Like, right? They can win you a game there.
Exactly. And I think with Orlando, that's the other big question with them. But ultimately, Desmond Bain, maybe Tyus Jones, he has a bounce back year after, like you said, weird year for Phoenix. Yeah. But I still really like Tyus Jones, and Jalen Suggs back as well. Hopefully he takes another step forward. So I think we both agree with Orlando. They're already there. It's just there's still some lingering questions. And then there's the Atlanta Hawks. Yeah. They add Kristaps Porzingis, Nickeil Alexander-Walker, Luke Kennard. They draft Asa Newell, trading down from 13 to 23, getting
from being in a front office, I understand the thinking,
yes,
the logic. Having been out of the NBA front office for 10 years now, I assess it a little bit differently. I don't have the blinders on anymore. I can look at the wide range perspective, and that is a...
Well, both moves by New Orleans, well, just to take a quick aside, we
went from Atlanta to New Orleans.
They trade Indiana's first in 26 during the finals, before Halliburton
could come back and bite
before
them a
Turner
bit.
Walks, and then they trade that pick on draft night.
Yeah.
Good for Atlanta, though, to get that.
No, it is good for Atlanta, and I think the biggest thing with it's Atlanta is, like, who are you, right? I remember doing TV about 2 years ago, and it was them in Chicago, and we were like, pick a direction, man, like, finally who they are, and what they did wasn't reckless. Like, they kind of knew, they kind of worked around the margins. They knew Boston was going to move off Holiday, and certainly they get Kristaps Porzingis. They move up, they move back 10 spots and get Asa Newell, I really like. They control Milwaukee's first in the next 2 years for, 26 and potentially 27. Nickeil Alexander-Walker, Luke Kennard, you had to address your depth in your backcourt. I'm intrigued as far as where are we going to see maybe a little bit of a different version of Trae Young, who was pretty good, really good offensively, certainly passing the ball last year. But now he walks into a situation where, like, he doesn't have to be the guy anymore. And you also have, you got Jalen Johnson coming back. You have Zachary Richichet, Dyson Daniels, who we're talking about right now. The bar has been so low because they've been spinning the wheels, that getting in and getting in as the eighth seed was okay, and then we're going to try it again and do it again. And they did do that as far as last year, or they lost in the play-in to Miami. And now we're looking at it like, how do you make changes? How do you go about doing it? And sometimes when you bring in I know Ansi Salehe was there already, but you bring in a different fresh perspective with him and Brayson Graham and Peter Dinwiddie, it changes kind of the perception as far as how you see your roster, who doesn't fit, and what they need to go out and get.
But you still worry about the defense of this team collectively.
I do, and I do think it's probably going to be a little bit of an adjustment, because when you have, just having gone through, when you do have so many new faces, four new faces, trying to integrate that, I think that's why training camp is going to be critical. But I think this is probably the best team collectively that Quinn Snyder has since he's when he took over, without a doubt here. And I think it's built to where they are. Porzingis comes off the books and maybe they extend him or give him a new contract, but I think it's built like in a good way. Trae is going to be the most interesting thing with me, as far as he's extension eligible, four for 222. Is he still a max guy? Do we get in a position where, how the rules are, is it okay to negotiate with all-stars? Or do you have to write blank checks still? We live in a world, oh my God, I'm going back to I remember 98, where basically you were giving out max contracts like lollipops. Here's one for Van Horn. Here's one for Kittles. Here's one for Marbury back in New Jersey here. And I do think how the rules are right now, and I think that's probably where it bit Denver a little bit. Like, you'd love to go back and with the Jamal Murray extension and be like, we're going to reward him. But I'm not going to reward him at four for 212 mil, whatever the number was, because we think he's a really good top starter, but we don't think he's an all-NBA level player. And instead of starting him at 46, we're going to start at 38. And I think that's where teams kind of get themselves into trouble there.
I think so, too. The salary numbers right now, I know you should look at things from the percentage of the cap.
Oh, my goodness.
But the raw numbers, Bobby.
You get in trouble a little bit when you have the 35% guys. That's the doomsday. And I think Shea, who just signed, is different because he's 26, right? Like, you will live that with that. I'm not willing to live with Bradley Beal at a 35% max when he's your third best. Like, that's where you get yourself into trouble there.
So the Knicks, Are they still one move away, or are they already there as a contender?
I think they're still another move away with their bench. I do, but it's going to be hard to do it, because you look at it is such a rarity when you go to an Eastern Conference Finals and you fire your head coach, and you had a little, you kind of knew who they were, and now you have Mike Brown coming in, and no offense, this ain't Sacramento, and this ain't even Cleveland back in 2008 or 9, and I think is a really good coach. But basically trying to instill, you know, what are they going to be? Are they going to be the Sacramento team from 3 years ago? Are they going to be that Cleveland team that it was really good defensively when LeBron was, like who are you going to be? And I think that's going to be probably the biggest unknown as far as, you know, maybe not outside of the roster.
Well, I would hope Mike Brown takes some pages out of that Sacramento playbook, though, because with Karl Anthony Towns, there felt like a lot of times throughout the playoffs and the whole year, some of his playmaking ability was just not being used. And with Tibbs, that was one of the criticisms I also felt with when he had Isaiah Hartenstein as well. There wasn't enough playmaking for him. So I think that was a Tibbs thing. Whereas with Brown, we see what he did with Sabonis. With Sabonis, it's kind of obvious. That's how you have to play with him.
It's almost like go back to, I think it was game five or game six in Detroit, the game he hit the shot. To win the series, and it's like the four possessions before that were awful. And he hits the shot to win the game, and we're like, oh my God, this, you know, like how great is he? And then, but we also saw at the end of games in the Indiana series, like when their New York is at their best when the ball's moving around, when it sticks in his hand and it's basically ISO, it's basically like, all right, it's almost like Iverson-ish back in the 90s, which is fun. And I think New York is going to have to get away from that a little bit as far as how they evolve more offensively.
And I think with the Cleveland Cavaliers, you know, there was rumors about them going for Durant this offseason. They end up not getting Kevin Durant. They do get Lonzo Ball for Isaac Okoro. They sign Larry Nance. They bring back Sam Merrill. They lose Ty Jerome to Memphis.
Yeah.
With the Cavaliers, do you think they are already contenders, or are they still a move away?
I want to give them the benefit as contenders because they won 64 games last year, and I know they lost Ty Jerome. That's going to be the thing. So on what we see in the regular season, is that translate to the playoffs? Is it like between here, right? Like, do they have that toughness that lacked? Like, it's okay when you're going into Miami and dismantling them in four games. But when you took a punch against Indiana in game one and, you know, can you get off the mat? I think that's, and you saw that with Oklahoma City. Like, game four in Indiana, down 2-1, down 9 going into the fourth quarter. Like, the championship teams, like, go through that adversity, go through that Denver series here. And that's why what we see with Cleveland right now and what they're returning, I think them and New York are the two best teams in the Eastern Conference, but there's a big difference between regular season and as far as what you get into the playoffs.
There's a reason why Garland, Mitchell arguably should be split up. Mobley, Allen arguably should be split up. And I think it hits what you're talking about. Kenny Atkinson, did you see what he said after they got eliminated? He had like this great post-game presser, like 30 seconds in, kind of almost unprompted. He's talking about, you know, there's like a mental aspect, a physical, like the mental controls the physical. And he's like, Indiana, start to finish in these games, they're running, they're playing hard. And he's like, I think we're missing that aspect. And he's like, I think we can learn it, but they don't have it. They didn't have it. And I just don't know if Garland Mitchell and then Alan Mobley is the right pairing for them to actually be a championship team, which is why they're having these high-level conversations about what to do.
You know, it's almost like, and we live in this world, you know, with the aprons, right? And we live in, it used to be like 3-year window, 4-year window. Now it's like we're in these like mini windows. That's why I never say like, and maybe OKC might be a little bit of a different animal here. Like, you know, the window is open for this team. They're so young. And people were probably like, I wrote the Pacers offseason article and then Tyrese gets hurt and then you got to change it. Because as far as, you know, now they're not the favorites in the Eastern Conference anymore because they would have been here. And it changes certainly the dynamics as far as who you are.
With the Pistons, are they still a move or two away? Or
Detroit's interesting because they identified what they needed with around Cade. And when they went out and got Hardaway and they got Beasley and they got Schroeder at the deadline here, they said, we got to put some scoring around him, some shooters. And they kind of are using a different color paint, the same color but different players here. I thought they pivoted really nicely in light of what happened with Beasley. to go out and get Caris LeVert, and you get Duncan Robinson, you add some shooting, and you mentioned Chaz Lanier, who's at Tennessee and is more of an established player who's been in college 4 or 5 years, and you get Jaden Ivey back from that injury, who was playing really well before he had that injury here. I do like the components around them, but I do think they're kind of one move away. They've got all their picks now to go out and, canvas the market here. They've got some expirings to, get the big Tobias number as expirings here. It's a matter of, how much are you willing to kind of go in when you do have a window here? Because eventually, Jason Tatum is going to come back, and, you trust Brad Stevens to retool around him. And I watched his newser, and he says rebuild like it was offended, like, I don't know that. No, so you do have to retool, and you have Jaylen Brown and Derek White, and Haliburton will eventually be like here is your, it's almost like when Jordan retired right in the mid, when he went to play baseball in the mid-90s, and everyone's like, here's our window, right? We've got 2 years to go out and figure out before maybe he comes back.
I agree, a move or two away.
Yep.
And you still need Cade to get better too.
Yep.
Cade was not quite the guy in the playoffs that he was in the regular season. You hope he grows from that and comes back next season and is able to better perform in the postseason. The Bucks, they are a strange team. I'm not even sure how to talk about them exactly. You get Giannis on speed stream today.
I never even heard of that.
And he's like, probably. I love Milwaukee in terms of staying, but they add Miles Turner, shockingly taking him from Indiana. They bring back Kevin Porter, Bobby Portis, Gary Trent, Ryan Rollins. They wave and stretch Damian Lillard. They get rid of Pat Connaughton, Brooke Lopez. So it's a year of change with the Bucks. Assuming Giannis is back, do you think they have enough? Are they already contenders, or are they still a move or two away?
I think they're still a move away. They had nothing really to play with, right? They had the non-tax mid-level exception to go out and play with. And I've been in that situation before when you basically are running out of options and you're basically just throwing stuff against the dartboard. And I know waving and stretching a guy who's owed $113 million is not ideal, and you're taking a $23 million cap hit for the next 5 years. But when you're trying to retain a generational player, you will go out and do whatever you can. And as I've said before, then it's going to be someone else's mess to clean up 3 or 4 years from now. And listen, you could debate, was Miles Turner the right guy, or could you have done it? But that's for another day. But I do think when you bring in Turner and you bring back most of your own guys, except for Brooke, with Portis, and you have Gary Trent and Ryan Rollins, and you signed Torian Prince, of course, and you brought in Gary Harris. And so I do think there's enough there to be competitive in an Eastern Conference. I do think they are one move away, but what's that move when you look at, you've got three players, Giannis, Kyle Kuzma, and Miles Turner. And then it's everyone, there's 12 guys making $13 million less, and there's 8 of them making $3 million. And you've got a 2031 or 32nd pick to trade in a deal, and you have no seconds. What is that one move to kind of cobble together enough to go out and do that?
To me, I think it's upgrading off Kyle Kuzma. With Kuzma, it feels like maybe this year will be different. But with the Lakers, what he turned into in Washington, developed a lot of bad habits.
If we see the version that we saw in the first round, it's going to be a struggle, because now I always say this, when you go through free agency and you sign 8 players, the goal is to hit on go 500, right? Hit on 4 out of the 8 with that. And I think and you don't have a draft pick to kind of come in and supplement some of that, but you've got to have him, as you said, play the version that we saw with the Lakers.
Yeah, and I think the Bucks, you got to give them credit. They had really no moves to make. They got creative. I feel like they're better on paper. And again, it's sort of what we talked about with the Knicks earlier. What is the system going to look like? Because I remember a year ago, Doc Rivers, there was rumors that Doc wanted to play a more versatile, higher-paced style. That there's Brook Lopez trade rumors. Could he go to Houston a year ago at this time? Well, Brook Lopez comes back. They play largely the same way. We didn't see that. But we did see at the end of the season, triple-double Giannis, point Giannis, playing with a bunch of spacers and faster-paced guys around him. If they play that way with Turner and Giannis in the front court and Andre Jackson and Gary Harris,
AJ Green,
all these guys, that gets interesting with what the Bucks could be. It'd be different than a lot of these teams the way they're building right now, but with some tweaks, I don't think you can rule out that Bucks team. I don't.
I think what they saw was a little bit of a blueprint in that Indiana series, especially Game 5, where they said, okay, if we tweak things, some things around, and we swap out Brook Lopez for Miles Turner, and we bring back Trent, and we bring back Rollins, we have no Lillard, and some other pieces around, that's a team that can compete with the team that just went to the NBA Finals.
Tell me about Sports Business Classroom, which is happening right now in Vegas. You have this every year for how long now?
Well, it's been going on, I think, for about 8 or 9 years. This is year 2 for me as far as being the lead instructor at Sports Business Classroom. We start Sunday, the 13th. We go into the 19th. We have sold it. Sure, oh my goodness, it is... If anyone sees me here and you see me like at the, when you see me at that Dairy Queen stand, you know, like it's been, pull me away and say, it's going to be all right. We sold out this year. We had 135 students sign up. We're adding more. I think we might hit 140, which would be record number. 4 majors. We added a 4th this year, which is athlete representation, NIL, salary cap, media broadcast. We have scouting video analytics. So your 4 majors there. We've kind of changed some of the content up a little bit. We're implementing WNBA this year. I want to learn about salary cap in the WNBA, especially with a collective bargaining agreement. A lot of NIL stuff. People want to know as far as how the future is. We're bringing in Rachel Baker from Duke and Wes Wilcox from Utah. And we have a lot of different fascinating programming, and then we're going to have a lot of people stop in and pop in and say hi. But it's, I said this to Warren Legarry and Albert Hall and Sergio, who are in charge of this last year. It's one of the more rewarding experiences because I just turned 52 years old. Like, for me, it's going to be like the next wave of generational people who want to learn about that. And I think the goal is we got to educate people, right? Educate people when Oklahoma City spends $800 million. Like, it's going to be like what it means to them and the apron and how they have sustainability and all these different things. And I'm looking forward to get going on Sunday.
Hey, Bobby, I mean, you talk about educating. You do that better than anybody with a salary cap.
I'll tell you what. I'm going to give the MVP of the summer is my 19-year-old son, Jake. And here's why. He taught me how to use Canva, the graphic design that allows me to put up all these pretty rosters and everything. Everybody didn't like my whiteboard. They said I had bad handwriting. So we put up the graphics, and it kind of just gives you a little bit more of a visual as far as where teams are and everything. The beauty of it, and you love this game and everything like that, is that to kind of show who this, eventually LeBron and Curry and the older players are going to be, gone. But it's going to be like that next wave of younger players and where these rosters are going, and just kind of educate for more people to love what we're doing.
Bobby, appreciate you joining me today, man.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Kevin O'Connor Show. Joining me today, Kirk Henderson from Mavs Moneyball and Sam Espandiari from Light Years Ahead and Playback. How you guys doing today?
Saturday in Vegas. It could be a whole lot worse.
Yeah, life's going well right now.
I'm very happy life's going well for you right now. For the Warriors, they haven't done anything in this offseason, so we'll start with the Mavericks, Kirk Henderson's team. Kirk, Cooper Flagg had 31 points. We're recording this on Saturday, day 3 of Summer League. His best performance of the two we've seen him so far. Are you feeling love for the Dallas Mavericks again, watching this guy don a Mavericks uniform and dominate the way he has?
Yeah, it was fun. He got to the line 13 times. They still made him bring up the ball for the second straight game. In 60 minutes of action, they have 2 games so far. He had, and I guess only 2 he's going to play. He only had 3 turnovers. And they were making him handle the ball a lot, putting him in isolation situations. I'm not sure how much that's really going to be part of what he does next year. But it was fun watching him just test sort of his limits. And he started off pretty slow, 1-for-4 to start. He finished the game, I think, 10 of 20. He only hit 8 of 13 free throws. But getting to the line is nice. And the willingness to take the 3. The shot looks good. There's so much to be excited about with him early on.
Sam, with Cooper Flagg, one of the things that stuck out to me are the 2 plays that don't even pop up in the box score. It's these 2 missed dunks he had.
Okay.
Where he just exploded at the rim, attacking closeouts. And I feel that Cooper might be a little bit more bouncy than we've seen. I'm thinking to myself how this guy is just out for blood attacking the basket. And so you think about Cooper Flagg fitting into the Mavericks ecosystem when it's the full NBA roster and not the summer league roster. How much of an early impact do you see Cooper Flagg making for Matt Dallas this year?
Yeah, so I was actually asking Kirk about this before we started recording. Like, their roster is very talented, but it's kind of weird. Like, I think he's a four or five in the modern NBA.
Maybe
in general.
He's the four. He wants to be the four.
But their best players all play those positions. Like, AD, like, Lively, obviously, he's going to play a gap, like, keep going. So, is he going to play the three? Are they going to play him as, like, an ISO wing? Because I don't think that's his game. I don't think he's, like, Kevin Durant 2.0 in any capacity. And I'm just curious to see the way it plays out. Like, I'm just as optimistic on him as you guys are watching him, like, well, sky is the ceiling for his talent.
The Mavericks need to reset their own external expectations because ever since they traded Luka Doncic, they keep talking about championship. Well, when you fail to miss the playoffs, or fail to make the playoffs, and then you land the number one overall draft pick, your timeline shifts. I don't care what you say externally. Internally, that just has to be the way it goes. So if they put an emphasis on building up Cooper's, let's just say his skill set, if they want him to be a playmaker, I think that's great for Cooper Flagg and great for the long-term Mavericks. What it won't be is good for win totals. And that's just sort of a fact of life. Rookies don't impact winning. Well, very, very rarely. And we've had some good ones the last 10 years. And so that's it. The roster part that Sam talks about is pretty important. They got a lot of stuff to suss out there. But it will at least be very weird. You know, sometimes we complain about the sameness of the NBA. And so now we're
They're not like every other team, which is just trying to be like four out.
No.
Spacing around.
It's like smash mouth basketball is what's going to happen. And they don't really have a lot of play initiators. But I'm looking forward to at least watching the weird.
It will be weird. And I think that's what makes it exciting, though, because it is different. But you mentioned with Cooper, you know, if you invest in a rookie and you're trying to get him developed and all that, you know a lot about two timelines. Don't you, Sam?
Oh, what a transition. What a perfect podcast pairing to just juxtapose how bad this could go for Kirk.
So tell me, how bad could it go, considering your experience with the Golden State Warriors? And what are the risks in having a two-timeline approach?
Well, I think there's a fundamental difference where the first timeline in Dallas hasn't won anything. So there's not like a built-in, there's not a built-in culture of this is the way we do things. We play this way, and it's your responsibility to fit into what we do. There's still very much a work in progress figuring out who they are. I mean, Kyrie is even going to play this year? Like, maybe the second half of the season? Like, that's kind of
he's becoming a very popular Twitch streamer.
Right.
Because they can make it.
He's a good streamer, by the way.
He is. Yeah,
very, very, very compelling content. It's just conflicting priorities, conflicting agendas. Like, Kirk mentioned it, but it's like, at some point, they're going to have to pick a path. It's either going to be like, we think this is Cooper's franchise, and when the right opportunity comes, maybe we move off of some veterans for guys who are more age appropriate to build with him with, or, we might be able to run the West when Kyrie comes back, and you know who's a great trade chip? Cooper Flagg can go the other way.
No.
I don't want to give you PTSD, sorry. But like it is kind of like you can't do both things effectively. You try to do both things, you probably end up in the play-in.
I think that's a real possibility, considering how deep the Western Conference is. And I think one of the reasons why I wanted to bring you guys on was the two timeline aspect.
Sure.
The other reason is I don't think either of your teams are winning anything this year. That's just the reality of it. I don't think either team is winning the championship.
Okay,
no matter the aspirations.
We're recording this pre-Al Horford. So
pre-Al Horford.
If the Warriors get Al Horford, does that change your opinion?
Pre-Al Horford, pre-LeBron buyout.
Well, so
it could go to either of you guys, right? If that were to happen, you never know.
Well, maybe we can timeshare.
Yeah, there we go. Have you seen any Warriors win totals so far?
Yeah.
So what are they sitting at when you see?
48, 47.
Okay. Under.
So the Mavericks are sitting at 38 to 41.
Really?
Really.
Huh.
But it's one up from 38 to 41. which makes me wonder if that's being reflected in some of this LeBron nonsense that's out there in the ether. And we're recording this on a Saturday. I'm guessing this will probably go up in like a week, something like that. Yeah. So maybe the world will be wildly different by the time this is up. But the, you know, the not winning something is important. Now, I'm just, for the Mavericks in particular, I just don't really see another play-in would be, I just think, kind of a waste. Like, at a certain point, you have to use the assets that you have wisely, and that's the kind of guy. They have log jams, but they do have good players. Most of the players that Sam's mentioned that are old,
they all play the same position.
They all play the same position, but they could also be effective on other teams.
Sure.
You know, it's not like they have guys that are just kind of wasted contracts, which sometimes you see in the league.
I mean, look, Dallas has a ton of talent. Undeniable. A lot of talent. And I just think there's too many ifs. If Kyrie Irving comes back, if Anthony Davis stays healthy, if Cooper Flagg is all-star caliber as a rookie, if this remade coaching staff is successful at all. They lost a lot of guys.
Hold that thought, and we'll be right back.
There's so many ifs with Dallas and with Golden State. What a weird summer. Like, nothing's happened at all. Jonathan Kuminga is still a restricted free agent.
Only team to not make a move. Like, they should get some credit for that. Yeah. Talk about stability. Just being patient.
Virtues. So are you guys being literal? Like, they don't even have, like a fringe, like, minimum signing yet? They don't
not
have
yet. Anything?
Nothing.
They're the only team who has not made a move.
Does that happen very often, or am I losing my mind?
I mean, I think they're just waiting on Horford. Because that's going to be a domino with Kuminga.
It seems like everything hinges on them figuring out what happens with Kuminga. Is it a sign and trade? Does he come back? What is the number?
What's your prediction with him?
At this point, it's hard to predict anything other than him coming back, right? Yep. Like, it doesn't seem like there's a market for him. It seems like he wants more than the market is dictating. The Warriors don't want to give him more than they have to give him at this point. And so it feels like a waiting game. It feels the exact same as all the other restricted free agents. Like, nobody's trying to sign Josh Giddey. No one's trying to sign Quentin Grimes. And all those players and Kuminga's in the same camp need to come to the realization, like, I get it. The guy who was drafted in your class got 30, 40, 50 a year. You're not, you know? Like, you're still going to get paid. Don't worry about it. And so, to the Warriors' point, it feels like until that is resolved, nothing else really gets opened up.
No, I feel for Kuminga in some ways, because you enter restricted free agency, you'd think the Nets would want you, right? A team, a clean slate, but even they didn't want him. And I think, like, it has to be a reality check for him in some sense that, like, okay, wait a minute. Of all the things that I've shown and all the things that I haven't shown that I believe I can show, still nobody wants me. Still nobody wants me. And so for him, I wonder, is it possible at all, Sam, that he goes back to Golden State with a new mindset and embraces what Steve Kerr wants him to be as, like, a Sean Marion type of player? Or is this just pure delusion, because this is a guy that everything we've ever heard about Kuminga is that he just wants to be star, go-to scorer type, and that's that. That's all.
I mean, anything is possible, but probable is what you're talking about. And the more likely scenario is it'll be the same thing we've seen for the last 3-4 seasons. Like, why would you think it would change?
No reason
he's,
to think it
he's
would.
He's publicly stated, like, and by the way, you can look at this as a positive. Like, he wants responsibility. He wants to see if he can be the man, that sort of thing. He feels like he's been limited by the Warriors. I would argue the opposite. I would argue they put him in situations that make him look better than he is, and, you know, you don't see some of the weaknesses because he's always off ball and just kind of taking advantage of, you know, Steph's gravity or whatever it may be, right? But I can also understand the young player perspective of, I just want to see. I want to have the opportunity that my G League Ignite teammate Jalen Green had. I want to have the opportunity to see if I can average 20 this league. I want to have the opportunity to see if I can be an all-star, those sort of things. And that's actually where I would say all the frustration in Warrior Land comes from. They're essentially holding him hostage because he is an asset in terms of they took him in the lottery. He does have value, but he doesn't have value to their team based on the way he wants to play. And it's just, how many years in a row of okay, we'll trade him if we can get a star. Ah, no one's giving us a star for him, so let's keep him. And meanwhile, he's like unhappy with his role and the coaching staff. They don't really believe in him. What? No, I don't really care what they say publicly. Their actions show you.
Right.
They think he's nice, but they don't believe in him. If that makes sense. It's just, it feels like, how many more years in a row of this do we have to do?
Kirk, would your opinion of the Warriors change if they get Al Horford at all with what they could do next season?
No, but you do have to like it as a... I mean, if we're talking 48 wins, that's a pretty good baseline. It's
what they won last year.
It's a little bit like there's a movie that came out as like Space Cowboys that had like Clint Eastwood. It's like a bunch of old guys.
Yeah.
Like the old guys in the West. That narrative and storyline is at least fun.
It is
fun.
And
it's guys, and it's a weird collection.
Yeah, let's get Chris Paul's. Let's get Chris Paul too.
Let's never get Chris Paul ever again. Please, please never. No more Chris Paul.
I think Chris Paul with Mike Breen. That's what we should see next year.
That might be where we're headed.
I just can't believe, just for me as a guy that watched Sean Marion become the Sean Marion who could maybe be a Hall of Famer at some point if the NBA ever wakes up. To say that I'm not that interested in because that was Marion's problem. Marion wanted to be the star. And then when he eventually got moved to Dallas, he accepted that role. And then they won titles. Like, he was a hugely important part of that. I find that so strange to be like, oh, I want a different... I know Sam said he thinks it's interesting that he wants responsibility, but he's saying, well, I don't want that responsibility. I want this responsibility. It's like, that's not how teams function.
And by the way, like, OKC just won the title, and I would argue one of the biggest reasons they won the title is the guys who do those jobs take pride in doing those jobs, you know? And when the Warriors were, like, dynastic and good, they had guys who... Like, Andre Iguodala might make the Hall of Fame because he did that stuff. He
should, yeah.
He did.
Well, I bet.
He bought it. Like, buying into your role is kind of an underrated thing. And it's just, it frustrates me that the Warriors are still doing this dance with a guy who clearly, he has a different idea of how he wants his career to go. And that's fine. But your job as management is to read the room and make the best decision for your team instead of kicking the can down the road and, like, maybe this will be the year that he gets the message that he clearly does not want to get.
This is true for players of all different degrees. Role players, the Kuminga types that are still trying to prove something, but also for stars, right? I mean, like you mentioned it with OKC, Jalen Williams in certain teams would get more touches, but he's playing behind SGA. He accepts that. Chet Holmgren is playing behind both of those guys. He's embracing playing hard on defense. Jaylen Brown, we mentioned Kyrie's Twitch stream earlier this week. He talked on that with Kyrie saying how we haven't seen Jaylen Brown at his best because of the sacrifice required with those Celtics teams. So I think when it comes to playing winning basketball, that's part of it. Like sometimes you need to take a lesser load. You need to do different things. You need to hit a spot up three and not be the guy who's the ISO scorer. That's part of what's required in order to play winning basketball. You saw this. You've experienced more winning with the Warriors than anybody in this building with the Warriors this past decade. You see that with so many different iterations.
When everyone is bought in and comfortable with their role, like, you know, sky's the limit for what the potential of a team is. And the Warriors are, you could say, experiencing the other side of the NBA ever since they started this two-timeline project where it's like, I get it. It's like, all right, your core is getting older. You want to supplement them with young players, and your goal is going to be to develop around them. But not every young player is down for that. You have to have the right young players. You have to have players who understand their role. Their skill set makes sense there. You mentioned Jalen Williams. He could get more touches on another team. From what I can see, he seems very happy in the role he's in OKC. He seems very happy being the second option who defends his ass off and kind of plays off of Shea. You know, like, that's a part of it, too. He's not out there going, like, man, if I had my own team, I could average 30. You know, like, it doesn't...
Like Kuminga's too.
Exactly. And, like, Kuminga is honestly... I think he'd honestly be thrilled if he was the second option on the Warriors. But they're looking at it from the perspective of, like, okay, Steph. Jimmy's clearly the second best player on this team who are going to run offense through, and we need you to play off of them, which means being a better spot-up shooter, cutting, just being active off-ball really is what they always ask of him. Like, be active off ball defensively and offensively. Like, use your athleticism. You should lead the team in rebounding because you're more athletic than everyone, that sort of stuff. And it just, you know, young guy, kind of bored, wants to take shots.
And to me, I think that's one of the things most exciting about Cooper Kirk, because with Cooper Flagg, when he's on the floor with AD and hopefully with Kyrie at some point, he can impact the game in a winning way across the board. We've seen this already in Summer League.
And it might not necessarily be the sort of thing that fills the box score. It's going to be rolling to the basket. It's going to be sealing Draymond Green, if he's going to get a rebound, and letting Anthony Davis wreak havoc. It's going to be playing in the passing lanes and effectively sort of shutting off parts of the floor. There's just a lot of stuff about Flagg that Summer League is not a good demonstrable way of how he's going to be used and playing. And so if you are a little underwhelmed by Flagg as a Mavs fan, I'm just telling you, there's more to this guy's game. And the way he fits with the other forwards, they're going to accentuate one another. The Mavericks' challenge comes offensively and maybe kind of ball movement and things like that. But, you know, the way Flagg plays is he wants to win. He wants to win at any cost, is what I've been told. Like, he's this, and I mean this in a positive way, he's a basketball psychopath, is what people have told me. And that sort of, you know, you see it as ice. Like, when he attacks the limb, he intends to do harm when he goes to dunk. Players like that are more rare than you'd think it. So I'm really excited about what he can do, and, you know, seeing what sort of role he's willing to accept his rookie year. It's going to be exciting.
The other thing that I just want to throw us out there, it's crazy to me how young he is. Because if you watch him play, he plays like a veteran. Like, you know, maybe he can get better with his shot and, like, skill development the way that every player can. But I was just like, in terms of feel, the stuff you're talking about, like, intuitively understanding when to seal a guy because someone's driving to the left. You know, like, intuitively understanding how to play off of other guys. Like, he plays like a veteran, and that's a very rare quality for, what is it, 18?
18 years old. Yeah. He turned 18 in December, midway through the college year.
One of my favorite things Nikola Jokic does is sometimes he will miss shots on purpose in a way to get himself a better shot because he can go get the offensive rebound. Flagg's not quite that good, but he's the kind of cerebral person who I think can and will probably try to do things like that. So
I completely understand the KG comp for him. While I don't think it's completely accurate because KG was like 3 to 4 inches taller, it's the way he plays the game. Yeah, the mental aspect, just like the way he processes the game, the priorities he has on the floor. Like, he seems like the type of guy who's going to be just as happy if it's like 15 points, 15 rebounds, and we win, as opposed to like 40 to 50 points in a leg.
Last thing, Sam, would you trade Jimmy Butler for LeBron James?
That's an off-record question.
would you want LeBron James in a Warriors jersey next season?
Wants a different word than
hope for, desire.
I think if it's on the table, it happens because Steph will want it to happen. And I'm just going to, you know, I'll flip-flop and be like, what do you mean? I always wondered. What are you talking about, you know?
Turk, would you trade a P.J. Washington plus Daniel Gafford plus
that's a different
ABC package. Salary package for LeBron, or are you just the buyout route for LeBron?
I actually think a trade package will clear up some of the Mavericks' problems.
Interesting.
Because they have so many forwards, and you just suggested trading a forward and a center for him. If you were, it's kind of a logical thing for me. Now, they would have less depth, but LeBron fixes your ball handling problem. But he maybe doesn't want to be Magic Johnson. Sorry, buddy, you're going to be late stage Magic if you're on the Dallas Mavericks. But also for my podcast and websites, like, if having LeBron James would help a great deal. For my basketball soul, no, I don't want it.
Okay, is that how you feel with your basketball soul? Is that it?
Yeah. Yeah, I like.
I don't want to have to root for LeBron.
Part of me appreciates the fact that clearly Steph and LeBron, like, they want to play together before they retire. They just don't know how to do it in a way that fulfills both of their, like, you know, egos, basically. Yeah. Like, that's definitely there. But the other part of me is like, I kind of like what they have going with Jimmy. I kind of love the idea of not doing it and seeing if they could figure it out. So.
Sam, Kirk, thanks. Thank you guys for joining me today.
It's been fun. Thank you.
Appreciate you, man.
Big thank you to Bobby, Sam, and Kurt for joining me today. Thanks to Madison for producing today's episode and to the whole team for producing it as well. Thanks to you for giving us a listen. We'll be back again very soon with another episode recorded from here in Las Vegas. Have a good day.